You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Well, the Heat are coming back from back-to-back losses for the first time all season. After a disappointing loss to the Brooklyn Nets last Friday, they traveled on to face the New York Knicks, staying within the same city and taking on the Knicks at Madison Square Garden, and they lost again. This was not the outcome a lot of people expected. Obviously, the Nets were a little bit more of a challenge. Even without Kyrie Irving, they have Spencer Dinwiddie, who's a very good shooter. They have Caris LeVert, who's somewhat rusty coming back from injury. But they have enough talent there where it was conceivably a difficult matchup. As many have pointed out, that first loss was one that Miami could have shrugged off. I think we've seen Miami kind of fall into that trap on occasion. They did so against the Memphis Grizzlies a couple weeks ago. They did it against the Magic. They did it against the Wizards. Kind of this recurring pattern of dropping losses to bad teams. But they always find a way to come back. And then with the New York Knicks, who have struggled, obviously, a lot of people expected, myself included, that they'd be able to bounce back with a victory, and that wasn't the case. They wound up falling apart defensively. They gave up a whole shit ton of points to RJ Barrett and others, Julius Randle in particular. And I think the defense and their problems on defense are what everybody's really talking about, because Miami has been, by and large, better offensively than they have been defensively over the course of the season. Their three-point shooting has been excellent. Their ability to put points in the bucket, you know, this is what they've done all season long. They've been able to get consistent scoring out of their rookie Tyler Hero, Goran Dragic coming off the bench, Jimmy Butler at the free throw line, and everybody else seems to contribute to a certain degree, whether it's Bam Adebayo or Duncan Robinson or Kendrick Nunn. But at the same time, their defense has been just good enough. They've had some issues. They've had some good games, and then they've had some games where it's been kind of glaring. And after back-to-back losses, you knew it was going to be a concern for Eric Spoelstra, as you would imagine it was a concern for the rest of the team. And so I actually covered today's practice, and Eric Spoelstra spoke about how defense was the priority in that practice. Here's the audio from after the practice session and what Eric Spoelstra had to say about that.
Was the focus as expected all defense today, or was it a bigger picture?
A large part of it. We worked some mechanics of our offense as well, but I'd say a large part was where it should have been.
I know a lot of times when there's a small rough patch, it's viewed as just a small rough patch. Sort of the last maybe 3 weeks or so of concern, of something just to learn from, sort of where's the team's mindset with
We just have to get better. Everybody's trying to get better. We're trying to get more consistent. Our defense isn't where we want it to be yet, and that's the operative word, yet. And today was just about solutions, working on some things, watching some film, and push our group to get to a different level.
Do solutions include change at all? I mean, you know, you talk about considering everything. I mean, are we at that point?
That's not what we worked on today, no.
As far as the defense, naturally, when you look at pain points, think rim protection, but how much of that is all contained on the perimeter?
It's all the above. Everybody has to do their job just a little bit better. And we've proven we can do it. We have the personnel that can do it. We just have to be more consistent with it. And that's what we worked on today. Just about solutions. Less talk. Just get to work and improve it.
So there you have it. A couple things to take away from Spo's comments. One, that the Heat and Spo in particular keep insisting that work is the key. That you can tighten things up, that they'll review film session and figure things out. But I'm not so sure I agree 100%. I think there's only so much you can do, but their system is so rigid. Eric Spoelstra is so rigid that I'm not sure there's going to be any kind of magic cure-all here. With no personnel changes in sight, and you heard Spoelstra answer Ira Winderman's question about whether or not personnel and any changes to the starting lineup might be something to consider. And Spoelstra denied that pretty flat out. I'm not sure what to do. I mean, Derek Jones Jr., I'm not sure that he's a viable starter right now in place of Duncan Robinson, perhaps. That might be the biggest, most significant change you can make. I think Spo likes his energy off the bench, especially bringing him in whenever they implement the zone defense. Either way, there hasn't been any other changes. No James Johnson, no taking Myers Leonard out of the starting lineup, as many people might suggest. I know I certainly did after the Knicks loss. But he seems to be, again, very rigid and stuck to his principles and what he believes and has taught this team and expects this team to be able to work through adversity. And I don't think that's enough, to be honest with you. And you could also see on Spoelstra's face, he does not seem as happy as he did earlier this season. The kind of joy of having Jimmy Butler on this roster, of having a new team without Hassan Whiteside, and the success that they had early on is gone a little bit. I think he's somewhat frustrated, but at the same time, and you can hear that in the audio, he still believes in his team's ability to turn things around. Maybe that's, again, another indicator of how stubborn he is and the kind of faith that he has in his team and their commitment to work being what will save them and help turn things around. But I just don't buy that. I mean, if you look at that starting lineup, Jimmy and Bam are the only defenders, the only plus defenders in that starting lineup. There are points being given away, hemorrhaged, if you will, by Kendrick Nunn, Duncan Robinson, Myers Leonard. They all have limitations physically. None, as quick as he is a little small. He can tend to get screened out of a play and just isn't aware enough of how to get under screens. You know, I think the Heat system also emphasizes them getting over screens and fighting through those. But the problem is that when you have a center like Myers Leonard, who is expected to drop back and pick up whatever ball handler, or you know, they're not the roll man, is dropping to the into the paint. You know, there are problems with that as well, because unfortunately Myers is not particularly quick enough to handle that. And then you also have off the bench, you've got Goran Dragic at the point position, who is also not a plus defender, especially as his knee continues to be a problem throughout the rest of his career. We expect that that would be the case. They allow ball handlers and opposing teams' best shooters to get wide open looks as they're coming off those screens, and so that's a problem. Again, Miami's unwillingness to switch out on the perimeter is another problem as well, is that they're committed to just fighting over those screens, sticking to their respective opponents there. They don't make switches, and that's a problem, because in today's league, you have multiple shooters out on the floor. You have guards that can set screens, and as a result, they'll get wide open looks out on the perimeter, or they'll be able to dive to the rim and get open shots, you know, either floaters or shots at the rim, as we saw versus the Knicks. The Knicks had 70 something odd points in the paint, and a lot of those came because of those botched screens and their Miami's inability to defend those at a high level. So that is a problem. Justice Winslow obviously could help, and I'll talk about him in the next segment, but I wouldn't count on his help anytime soon. And again, we keep expecting Miami to kind of bounce back, but they didn't do it against the Knicks. And their upcoming opponent, the San Antonio Spurs, shoot very well. And that's a problem. I mean, the Spurs have a much more high-octane offense that you would expect. And Miami is going to have to figure things out. And I'm not sure that today's long practice session was just enough for them to realize what their problems are if they're not willing to make changes to their schemes or changes to their personnel. So on top of that, Miami plays 3 games in 4 nights following the Spurs game on Wednesday. They go on the road to face a red-hot Oklahoma City Thunder team where they have got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's playing at a very, very high level. He just had 20-20-10 stat line in a win, and he's very, very, very good. They've got Chris Paul, as I've said all season long, playing at a very high level. Look, I never had a problem with Chris Paul joining Miami, if for no other reason than that incredible salary, but I knew he was going to be productive. I knew he was going to have a great season, and he has been having a great season of late. He's finally kind of found his form a little bit and found some consistency playing with this Thunder roster, and they've been very, very good. And then they go on and face San Antonio again on the road, so it's not quite a home-and-home series, but they take on San Antonio on Wednesday and then again over the weekend, and then they return back home to take on a very fast-paced Kings team on the second night of a back-to-back after facing the Spurs the night before. So things could get really ugly for the Heat if they're not careful, and I'm not sure that film sessions or commitment to work is going to be enough to save this part here, and you don't want to get Miami's overall goal, obviously, is to make the playoffs and to make the playoffs as a top four seed in the Eastern Conference, because you don't want to face one of these deeper teams at the top there. You don't want to face a Boston Celtics that they should make a trade in the second half of the season that can bolster their roster a little bit. Philadelphia, if they kind of figure it out and Joel Embiid comes back healthy, I still think that they're pretty dangerous. And obviously, Milwaukee is a pretty scary team. So as long as you can avoid them as much as possible, I think that's the goal for Miami. And they won't achieve that goal if they're not a top four team. So they need to be able to work a little bit more consistently, but they also need to be a little bit more flexible in making these kinds of decisions, because I just don't think that they've had the kind of success that they envisioned, and I don't see that they'll have it anytime soon either if they're not careful. So we'll move on here, but some news and notes about Chris Silva and Justice Winslow are coming up next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. About the upcoming matchup with the Spurs later on in the show, but first, some good news and some bad news about the Heat, and I'll start with the bad. Justice Winslow, as you saw from my tweet earlier in the afternoon at practice, Justice will not be available against the San Antonio Spurs. No further update has been provided whether or not he saw a specialist. There still seems to be, even among reporters, some speculation as to what's going on there. Nobody's gotten any kind of clear insight. Anybody who says otherwise is incorrect. The reality is that Winslow is apparently in much worse shape than we thought. That bone bruise is not healing at the same rate that they would expect it. Miami's method of dealing with these kinds of injuries is always to kind of expect their players to push through it, to find a way to go out there and play. And given that Miami's had some success, it makes sense. They don't necessarily need to rush Winslow back, but they'd like to have him out there. And against, you know, upcoming opponents, and to kind of help this these defensive woes that they've been displaying of late, he would certainly help to some extent. But right now, he's not available. I wouldn't expect him available anytime soon, to be honest with you. I wouldn't want him to continue to travel on the road, or to have to face Oklahoma City or San Antonio on the road. If he's going to play, it's probably not going to be until after that Sacramento Kings game. They play the Sacramento Kings on Monday, January 20th, and then they'll be off again until Wednesday, January 22nd. So basically a week from today. And that would probably be, my guess, the earliest that you could see Justice Winslow coming out there. And by that point, Miami could be 0-4. I mean, they could be on a six-game losing streak against the Spurs. The Spurs twice. Who, again, they're very good offensively. Their problem is defense, not offense. The Thunder have been playing very well of late, and the Sacramento Kings are very fast-paced and dangerous if you're not careful. You can't take them lightly. Miami's not. Miami has shown that they can't be taking any opponents lightly, even sub-500 teams, as you can tell from losses to the Wizards, Magic, and others. So this could be a very, very dangerous stretch, and I just want to put that out there. I don't want to sound pessimistic, because I still believe in this team's ability. When this team is clicking and everything is at a high level, they're fun to watch and they seem unbeatable, but they have not seen that in recent losses, not just over the weekend to the Knicks and the Nets, but also against the Wizards and other teams. And so this could be a very concerning stretch, a defining moment for the season, if you will. They cannot rest on their laurels. They cannot rest on the success they had earlier in the season. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem like Justice Winslow is going to be able to contribute anytime soon. So they were without Justice when they were winning games earlier on in the season. And if they're going to be without him, they need to find a way to continue winning, because Miami is too good right now to simply tank the season away. They wouldn't have done that anyway. For them, it's about finding consistency defensively and being able to play at the highest level to ignite some of that offense that we saw earlier on, where they were making plays for others and moving the ball so deftly. But unfortunately, Justice won't be a part of it. But there is good news, and that's that Chris Silva is expected to sign a contract. By the time you're hearing this, on Wednesday, he may have already signed that contract. My sources tell me that he is expected to sign on Wednesday. We didn't get any kind of indication on Tuesday of that. He came out and spoke to the media, and I'll play some of that audio here just to kind of get a sense of what he's gone through and everything else, because it's always interesting to hear about Chris Silva's story. So here is Chris Silva talking about the upcoming contract and situation and everything that's happened to him in order to get to this point.
Chris, obviously life can come at you fast sometimes, you know, from seeing your mom to having the early playing time to now a different situation for you also. This latest step to sort of, you know, taking that next step where you stand contractually, how exciting is it for you? I knew it was going to come. What's sort of your reaction to it?
I mean, I haven't signed yet. So, like I say, I always like to take things day by day. So, I mean, if it's coming, I mean, it's meant to happen. And I'm excited. I'm really excited. I mean, I get to work more and learn more and have more opportunities.
From going undrafted, and I'm sure the disappointment on draft night, to getting the Heat call, to Sacramento, to Las Vegas, to preseason, to where you are now. I mean, is this almost been a whirlwind for you, or are you the kind of confident person who might just tell people, well, sure, I always expected this?
I mean, listen, it was a long, long, long summer, you know. It was a grind from, like you said, from being disappointed not to be drafted, to being called, to not knowing what was going to be next, to discussing with my agent the next step, to, like, finally coming here for summer league, to, like, signing the 10K exhibition 10, to, like, playing to summer league, not know what's going to be next, to sign the two-way after the preseason. It's been long, and I mean, like I said, every step, I just focus on the present today, and that's what helped me get to this day. And I mean, I keep the same thing until I sign. I just focus on it.
So I just thought I'd include that because, obviously, as I said before, Chris's story is one of the best of the season, and certainly one of the best with Miami. Always interesting to hear his perspective on things. He's traveled so far to get to this point, literally, and he's worked so hard to get to this point. I love that when he was asked about the contract and everything that would happen, you know, once he does sign that contract, again, expected to sign it on Wednesday, his response was to say, well, I'll be able to work more now because being on a two-way contract, he was limited for the number of days that he could actually participate. He wasn't practicing with the team. He wasn't doing as much. He was just kind of doing off-court drills there, watching other guys work, but not engaging in the kind of work that he needs to. And he's told me before that he needs to continue working on that, and he'll get that opportunity. And that kind of work ethic, that kind of commitment, it's such a big appeal for Miami and Eric Spoelstra. It's why they brought him on board, knowing he's the kind of player that he is. So absolutely some good news for Miami in the midst of all this. Now, having said that, I don't think that Chris is going to be the solution. Like, he does bring energy there, but I'm not sure that he is hyper aware enough of his position on the court, on defense, to compensate for whatever issues there could be. Like, I think his tendency would be to switch a little bit more because he's just such a high energy guy. He doesn't mind attacking ball handlers. I could see him being that kind of defender, but you know, he just hasn't had many opportunities, and I don't expect that he will either. And another thing is that he is also very prone to picking up ticky-tack fouls because of his physicality, because of his aggression, and so he needs to harness that a little bit better in order for him to get more of these opportunities. He may not be the solution right away, and I think everybody will admit, and he would as well, that it is a long-term project for him. But he will eventually contribute, whether it's in Miami or elsewhere. My hope is that it'll be in a Heat uniform for the rest of his career. But the Spurs are coming into town on Wednesday, and as I mentioned before, reports of their demise have been greatly exaggerated. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. The Heat host the Spurs, who are currently 17-21 and in the ninth spot in the Western Conference. Obviously, a sub-500 record. Not that that should mean anything, because Miami, of course, has struggled against sub-500 teams. But they've also won 7 of their last 12. So that 10-16 start had everyone writing San Antonio's eulogy a little early. But we should have known better than to write off Greg Popovich and whatever team he's fielding, whether it's one with Tim Duncan or Boris Diaw, or this latest version with LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan at the head. He is going to find a way to maximize his players' talents. They have bounced back from that early season struggles. And the key to that has actually been DeMar DeRozan. His game has not really changed at all. But he is more aggressive as a shooter. He's shooting 53.5%, almost 54% on 16 shots per game. He's just converting, again, I mean, over 50% of those. So he is very aggressive at scoring. He's averaging about 22.4 points per game. He has been very, very good. He's getting to the line. He's shooting 83% from there. He's just not shooting the three-pointer. Look, he's hitting them at a 32% clip, but he's averaging less than one shot per game from beyond the perimeter. And so that is not the concern. You don't have to worry about Tamar lighting it up there, but he is going to get into the paint if you're not careful. He's going to be able to get past initial defenders, or he's going to be able to challenge either Jimmy or Kendrick Nunn or Duncan Robinson or whoever is switched onto him. And so that could be a concern. But you also have to watch out for LaMarcus Aldridge, who's playing at a very high level as well. I'll admit, I had not watched enough San Antonio games to glean that LaMarcus was as dangerous as he's become as a three-point threat, because he is shooting three-pointers at a career high, 45%, almost 45%, at just under 3 attempts per game from beyond the perimeter. That's ridiculous. I mean, and very, very, very good. Look, I still don't think LaMarcus is the solution for Miami, nor do I think San Antonio is actively shopping him around. But the fact that he's able to commit, I mean, look, he's averaging 3.8 attempts from beyond the arc. He's hitting about 2 of those and shooting at 44.7% from three-point range. Those are all phenomenal numbers. And he's still a low post presence. He's still a guy that shoots that mid-range jumper as dangerously as ever, but he's also incorporating that three-point shot into his arsenal, and that is incredibly dangerous. You also have to take into consideration Lonnie Walker from the University of Miami. Go Canes. He's emerged as a legitimate two-way player. He provides some pretty solid defense out on the perimeter and his incredible athleticism. He will probably pop off for at least one highlight reel dunk during the game, because that is just his game. He does have that kind of athleticism. He'll put up some crazy acrobatic shot. He's been fun to watch and emerge as a player because he is a unique personality, again, because he is a former Hurricane. So to me, that is exciting to watch. But he's also become a very solid player. After a rookie season that was a disappointment because of injury and a lack of playing time, he's come back stronger than ever and become a really good player for San Antonio. They've also been starting Trey Lyles, a guy who's taken a number of years to find his footing. He was a former Denver Nugget, and it just seems like he's already well-traveled, even though he's been in the league for a few years. But he's actually become San Antonio's starter at the center position. And he spaces the floor, too, not as well as LaMarcus does, but because of his floor spacing ability, you have to kind of take that into consideration. You can't leave him wide open, and so that allows for open looks for LaMarcus Aldridge or DeMar DeRozan or others. Again, from DeRozan, it's not that he's getting to the, he's not going beyond the arc to light you up from there, but he's going to be able to get into the paint, let go with an array of moves to create space there, or he'll finish at the rim a high level, or he'll take some incredible turnaround shot. He is the last of the semi-chucking shooting guards, and as a result, he's been very aggressive and very good this year. It's also a contract year, which I think absolutely plays a part of that, but he's also more comfortable in San Antonio's system than ever. You wouldn't think of this team as an offensive powerhouse, but they're the 7th best offense in the league at almost 114 points per game. They shoot the ball extremely well. They don't get to the free throw line very often. DeMar is probably the only player who does get to the line semi-regularly. But they do shoot, again, at a very, very high level. They're one of the best teams in the league at shooting almost 47% from the field, 47.3%. So they're actually third best in field goal percentage, just above Miami, actually. And so they also shoot the three particularly well. They're the fourth best team there, just below Miami at almost 37%. So they do shoot very well. Again, their problems are on the defensive end, where they give up a shit ton of points. That is what was their problem earlier on. They've tightened it a little bit, but they just don't have that kind of personnel. And Lyles and Aldridge are not plus defenders. DeRozan isn't a plus defender. They don't have anybody there with the exception of their guards, Derek White or DeJounte Murray, who are going to play defense at a high level. They're trying to outscore you, and so that's where they've been exploited, especially earlier on in the season. And so that's why they can still be dangerous, though, is because they'll put up a lot of points. And if they do, Miami's in for a tough challenge, because Miami's offense hasn't been the problem. It's been their defense. And so if they're giving up a ton of points to San Antonio, this could be another very dangerous game. I expect Miami to get by pretty, you know, it's going to be a squeaker. It's going to be a very tough matchup for them, because San Antonio does play well. They're well coached. They've had some time to prepare for this game. It's not like they were coming off a back-to-back or anything like that. And so there's some factors in Miami's favor, and I think the losses over the weekend will be enough to ignite them. If not, again, that could be indicative of a bigger problem in the future, because their schedule doesn't get any easier. But make sure to also check in with Jeff Garcia of Locked On Spurs. He does a very, very good job covering that team. He's got everything you might need to know. And I can't stress that enough. Look, I know I've talked to, you know, or heard your emails and read your emails and heard your tweets and things of that sort. And I know the concerns are, why would I want to find out from an opposing team, you know, anything about that team? I'm a Heat fan. It doesn't matter to me. Well, I get that. But at the same time, you kind of want to have a unique perspective there. We saw something, you know, on Twitter today about, you know, the Heat making a trade for Kyle Kuzma by shipping Goran Dragic or something like that. And that came from Stephen A. Smith on ESPN. And he's a national media pundit. He's been covering the league for a while. No pundit is perfect. You know, there are going to be holes there. You cannot watch all 30 teams and all 82 games over the course of a year, no matter who you are. Not Jack Lowe, not anybody. As a result, you're going to have some holes in your coverage, whether or not you just don't understand the nuances of a team or something like that. But if you listen to these shorter podcasts, and that's what the Locked On Network is all about, you'll get a nuanced perspective about San Antonio or the Oklahoma City Thunder or any upcoming opponent from the people who cover these teams, who know them better than anybody else. So that's a great benefit of being part of this network, and why I love talking to all 29 other hosts, because they offer so much insight whenever I'm working on a piece or have an upcoming matchup that I'm kind of concerned about. Like in this case, I didn't know much about the Spurs. I talked to Jeff. He kind of clued me in a little bit on what to watch for. And sure enough, after watching a few games, you really start to see how DeMar is popping off there, the court, and how he's improved his play from last season. So definitely check in around the league. If there's a team that you're kind of sort of interested in a little bit and you want to find out more, make sure you go on and listen to the other teams from the Locked On Network. I'll try to have a recap after the game. It's going to be a late one, so I can't guarantee that that's going to be the case. But stay tuned anyway, and hopefully I'll be able to get that recap up soon enough. That's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil, signing off, as always, and thanking you for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, B.